I'm so pumped about this. Last week we kind of opened off and kicked off this epic series, and today we're gonna roll right into the second story. Here's kind of what we're talking about today. When I was little, we lived at this house. It was a small house. It was over 100 years old. It's two bedrooms, and it was, you know, with my parents living there, and it was me and my brothers living there, and it was 850 square feet, which was really, really small. And so we got really cramped, but we had a big front yard and a big backyard, which was awesome because we were just rambunctious little kids jumping off the roofs and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And one day, you know, some of you might know I have a semi-active imagination, and it was worse when I was a kid. So one day I got this awesome idea, and please tell me that somebody else has had an idea similar to this. I thought it would be so awesome. Maybe you could turn these mics down. Yeah, thanks. I thought it'd be so awesome if I went to the backyard and I dug in the backyard down into the ground, maybe like 6 feet, and then over and created this den that I could just hang out with in underground with like my friends and my brothers and stuff. And I was like, this is so awesome. And I started conjuring all, it wasn't just going to be like a hole in the ground den thing. I started conjuring all these things that I could do with it. And I was like, oh, you know, and I could dig out this part right here, and it could have like a little bench. And over here, I could dig out like a little bed. And I was like, oh, I could bring stuff from my room down in here. And I had all this stuff, right? And in my head, it was so freaking awesome. Like, you have no idea. You would have been like, dude, I want to come to your whole den thing, and I want to just hang out with you all day long, right? I hadn't really figured out the lighting situation, but I probably would have like burned candles or something, and then the smoke would have probably killed me. But it would have been so awesome to die like in heaven, right? In the underground heaven. It would have been so cool. So what I did was I came to my mom and I said, hey, mom, can I dig a hole in the backyard? And she's like, sure, go ahead and dig a hole in the backyard. I didn't really elaborate on my whole plan at the time. So I set out the very next morning. Like, I started gathering my stuff that night in my room. And I put it all in the corner, and I was like, all right, this is all the stuff that I want down there. And I had like a beanbag chair, and I was like, oh, this is going to be sick in my underground den. And I had like a bed, like a mattress thing that we used to, you know, put in the closet. And I used to make my little brother James sleep in the closet on his little mattress. So I took that from him, so he has no mattress in the closet anymore. So I took that, and I was like super psyched. I was like, that's going to be awesome when I build my bed out of dirt, and I'm going to put the mattress on, and I can just sleep there for days. It's going to be sweet. And like all these like decorations, and I had this like awesome collection of baseball cards, and I was like, these gotta come, you know, to, and so it kind of works out that it didn't work out because they would have all got destroyed, but I still have them. But I was like, they're in the pile, and like all my cool stuff I had, and like my baseball gear, because I just wanted everything that was cool of mine, like down there, right? And so I could barely sleep that night. The next morning, with permission from my mom to dig a hole in the backyard, I went outside and I went into our garage and I found a shovel, and I was like, oh yeah. So I found a spot that was sort of around the corner of the house, like almost on the side of the house where my mom couldn't really see out any of the windows. And I started digging, and I was digging furiously, and I just started like throwing dirt and throwing dirt and throwing dirt, and like all morning. And then my mom yelled out the back door, you know, lunchtime. So I came in and I like washed my hands and I ate lunch. And I went back outside and I kept digging and digging and digging and digging. I dug all day long. And finally it was dinner time. Mom's like, because this is a rule when you're a parent, I've learned this, is that when things are quiet, something bad is happening when you have kids. Something bad. It happens with Noah all the time. I'm like, wait a second. I haven't heard Noah in like 30 seconds. And I'll walk in the room that he's in. He's like standing on top of the kitchen table, like, you know, like, come on, dude, what are you doing? Like, you can't be doing that stuff, right? So my mom's like, you know what? Today's been a little bit too easy, and I have not seen Jordan all day long. And so she comes out back, and I, no joke, am like up to my armpits in this hole digging. Mind you, I thought I'd be finished with this whole thing all in one day. But I was excited about how much progress. And I was up to my armpits, and I'm literally like peeking out over, and my mom comes out and is like, what are you doing? I'm like digging out. I'm like, hey, mom. Hey, what's going on? She's like, what are you doing? You're tearing up the backyard. And I said, remember yesterday I asked you if I could dig a hole? And you said, yeah. And she's like, well, I thought you meant like a little hole for your army men or something. You were in a huge hole. It was like this big around, and like, up to my armpit. It was crazy. And I was like, no, Mom, I have this awesome idea. So I'm going to go down maybe a couple more feet. And then, no, this is cool because I'm going to go down a couple more feet and then I'm going to dig a ladder in so I can go in and out. But it's going to be a hard ladder so that you and Dad can't get in. And then what I'm going to do once I'm down is I'm going to start digging this way, you know, and I'm going to go this way and it's going to be this huge room underground. And if you go in my room right now, you can check it out. I put all my stuff that I want to put in there in a pile. And you can go look at that stuff, and it's going to be awesome. I'll put it all down there. And James got to sleep on the floor in the closet now because I'm taking the mattress. But it's going to be awesome. And so I'm going to dig this thing, and it's going to be so cool. But I don't know, have any lights. Do you have any lights that I could have? Or maybe if we could run an extension cord down there or something. I don't know, so I can have electricity, maybe pull the TV down there. I don't know. And my mom is like, what are you doing right now? No. And so she's like, get out of the hole. We're going to go have dinner. And we'll talk to your dad about it. And I was like, oh, no. I don't know. If Mom ever said you're talking about Dad, it could be like something good, but it's just scary, you know? And so I was like, oh, no. So my dad comes home and we eat dinner. And I'm sitting at dinner super nervous. My mom hasn't said anything. And I'm just eating. And I'm looking at my dad. And I'm looking at my mom. They're talking about whatever. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. So dinner's finally done. And we take our dishes away. And we go sit on the couch in the living room. And my mom, and this is how I know things could be really bad, is because my mom gets really tactful. You know, I don't know if you've experienced this, but like, she's like, oh, hey, so, honey, so Jordan dug a hole in the backyard. It's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. And whenever your mom says not a big deal, you're like, oh, crap. Like, am I going to be grounded for like a month or what? Not a big deal, but there's a hole in the backyard. And apparently he's been digging it all day long. My dad's like, well, how big is it? She's like, well, maybe you should just go look at it. And I'm like freaking out now. I'm like, please, God, like, I know you can do stuff like this. Just make the sun go down so it's dark. And then just, you know, just for one night, maybe just the moon and the stars could all be gone. And it could just be so dark out there. And maybe all electricity and batteries for flashlights and stuff could maybe go out. Just for a night, like that'd be cool. Till my dad goes to bed, you can bring it all back. It's fine. And it didn't happen. So we went out to the backyard, and my dad walks up to the hole, and he just stands on the edge of it. And he looks at it. He looks at me. He says, "Get in there." And I was like, "Wait a second. Wait a second here. Not happening. Like, I did not just dig my own grave, right? Like, that's what I'm thinking, right?" He's like, gonna throw me in there, he's gonna start pulling the dirt back over me. I'm like, no way. And he's like, get in. And I was like, all right. So I jumped in, and he's like, that's a pretty big hole. He's like, what was your plan with that? And I was like, oh, you want to hear my plan? You're in, dude. This is awesome. So I tell him my plan. I'm gonna go down a couple more feet, and then I'm gonna dig this way. He's gonna have a den, have all my stuff, and I'm bringing it all down there. And Mom said we can have electricity down there. She didn't really say that, but I told him that. And it's gonna be so sick. But you can't come down there because I'm gonna make the ladder really hard, and it's for kids, it's not for you. And my dad's like, all right, that's cool. So you're going to dig this den out, right? How are you going to keep the ceiling from caving in on you? I was like, yeah. I was like, I thought about that because, you know, when I'm at the beach, when you dig holes at the beach, then, you know, if you get wet sand and then you just pack it tight, then it's fine, it stays, right? And I'm like, Dad, I'm genius, come on. Genius baby, maybe you should know this. And he's like, okay, but like, what if somebody stands on top of it? I was like, yeah, do you think it won't work? You know, maybe I could put like a pole in the middle or something. And like, well, I think that the risk of it collapsing on you and you dying in there is pretty high. And I was like, oh yeah. Yeah. No, I get that. I thought about that. Totally. On my own. And so the next day, I spent half of my day taking that shovel and filling the hole back in, which worked out because we ended up getting a doughboy pool later, which was awesome because we could make whirlpools in it. But I had this huge plan for this massive thing, right? And it was going to be so awesome. And the plans just fell through because things just did not work out. And that's kind of what we're talking about today because if you remember, if you were here last week, and if you remember and you weren't sleeping, then we talked about sort of the beginning of all things. And we talked about how God created all the stuff, and every single day God created something new. He's like, oh, let me create, you know, dry land from water. And he's like, oh, that's so good. And he's like, oh, I have a good idea. Let me put some stuff in that water and then maybe some birds in the sky. And he saw the sea creatures and the birds. And he's like, oh, I'm so awesome. That stuff is so cool. And then he's created animals. He's like, that's sweet. And then he's like, oh, let's make something like super dope that's just like us or like me. He said dope. But not in like a drug way, but in like a cool way. Because don't do drugs. That's what God says. All right. So he's like, oh, humans, they're so sweet, right? They're so good. And he's like, oh, I'm going to create this garden. I'm going to put them in there. I'm going to hang out with them. We're going to walk around all the time. It's going to be so cool. We're just going to hang out and be buds. And then they ate the one apple, remember, that they're not supposed to eat. And God's like, oh, you guys blew it. And then we talked about how things like the waves in the pool just started getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And Cain and Abel, Adam and Eve's kids, you know, Cain killed Abel. And then after that, what was the other thing that happened? Oh, yeah. A little thing called Noah's Ark, where people were just so bad that it said God was just so sad that he made people. The thing that he was like, oh, this is so awesome. I'm making them just like us. God was so sad that he even made them. That he took Noah, the one person that was still faithful to him and his family, and he said, you know what, you better build a boat. And Noah's like, what's a boat? And he's like, I'll just tell you exactly what to do. And so he did it, and he grabbed all the animals, and he grabbed his family, and they hopped on the boat, and God wiped out everybody because things got so bad. And then a little while after that, they got off the boat, and God said, okay, now spread out all over the earth. And so they started having kids and getting freaky deaky, and then there's people everywhere, but then they didn't spread out all over the earth. And so they built a city. And in the middle of the city, they built a huge tower. And the huge tower was just to say, you know, look how great we've become. Let's not spread out all over the place. Let's stay right here and let's build something that just shows how awesome we are. And God said, oh my gosh, it's bad again. This plan that he had for creating something that was perfect and awesome, a place where he could just hang out with the things that he created, just be with the people that he created, and it's straight going down the drain. And so we pick up the story today, actually in a pretty exciting spot. This is Genesis chapter 12. Because all this stuff has now just happened. And God's seeing, you know what, I wiped everybody out and I started from scratch, and things are going downhill again. We created the Tower of Babel. People just think that they're so awesome. So God comes up with a plan, and he's starting to initiate it here. Check this out. Genesis chapter 12, 1 to 3. There's this guy named Abram, and the Lord says to Abram, leave your country, your people, and your father's household, and go to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the peoples on earth will be blessed through you. And so God says, you know what? This didn't really work to wipe everybody out. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pick this guy, Abram, and I'm going to make him a blessing. I'm just going to bless him totally. And I'm going to make him a blessing to everybody, the whole world. And this is going to be good. This is going to be the way that I'm going to make things better again. And so he does that. And he initiates this plan to make things right. It's called redemption. It's like when you take like a can, like a Coke can, and then, you know, you redeem it for a nickel. What do you get, like a nickel per can? Is that true? In California? It's not nickels. So you take like a can and you redeem it. What are you doing? I got psyched for nickels all of a sudden. I don't know why. What are you doing when you redeem a can? Recycling, yeah. But what you're doing is you're taking a can, right, that you've already paid a nickel for. Do you know that? That CRV that you pay? You already pay that nickel and they're just giving it back to you. So this can that you've already paid for, and you give it to someone else, and somebody else pays you for the can. So in the same way, God is saying, you know what? I've made you guys perfect and you guys blew that. But even though I already made you perfect, and I paid, you know, to make you, basically, he's saying, you know what, I'm going to pay you, or pay again, in order to make you new. So, similar to redeeming a can for a nickel, God is saying, I'm going to redeem you and pay the price for you. And so when you hand over the can, you get a nickel back. And then when, but the person pays the nickel, but when you're given to God, God pays the nickel. No? Okay. Right. I'm glad that was super clear. Good. All right. So God is like, I have this plan and I'm going to make things better. And I'm going to make things better. And there's this story that we just heard about on the video. The story of this guy named Abraham. Check this out. A couple of chapters later, God says this to Abraham. All right. So Abraham's getting worried because God said, I'm going to make you a great nation. There's going to be, you know, people blessed through you and through your heirs. But Abraham's super old. He's like 75 years old. His wife is supposedly super hot, but still super old. I'm not saying we'll get there. She is, apparently. Everybody wants to marry her, and I'll get there in a second. All right, so super hot old wife, but she hasn't had... Stop. I'm not saying she's hot. I'm just saying the Bible says she's hot and old. I'll get there. Will you just stay with me for a second? That's almost a direct quote. All right. It's implied. Okay. Hold on 1 second. I will get there. I promise you. I will show you where the Bible says she's super hot. All right. Good. So super hot and super old, but she hasn't had any kids yet. And so Abraham's starting to get worried. So he says this to God. Abram says, O sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless and the one who will inherit my estate is Eliezer of Damascus? And Abram said, you have given me no children, so a servant in my household will be my heir. Then the word of the Lord came to Abram. This man will not be your heir, but a son coming from your own body will be your heir. So he's super old. He's like 75 years old. And God says, you know what? Don't worry about that. I'm going to take care of you. I know that I promised you this stuff, but, and you don't have a kid yet, but I'm going to take care of it. So don't worry about it. So they're super old and they're just getting older all the time. And so Sarah comes up to Abram and is like, you know what? I haven't been able to give you any kids. You know, the thing that I've given you is my super hotness. It's there. I'll get there in a second. Super hotness, but no kids. So why don't we do this? So that your servant doesn't inherit all your stuff. Why don't we do this? I have this marginally attractive servant girl. Not as good looking as me, but why don't you take her and have a baby with her? That's just weird, for one. It's just weird. But I love, let me see if I can find it real quick. So Sarah, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian maidservant named Hagar. So she said to Abram, the Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my maidservant. Perhaps I can build a family through her. Abram agreed to what Sarah said. And I like to figure out what really happened there. Like Hagar came up and was like, you know what? I haven't given you kids. So here's this girl. Why don't you have a kid? And Abram was like, is this a trick? Is this a trap or what? What's the deal? What's going on here? And like, what? I want to know what's going on through Abraham's head when this whole thing happens. And he's like, yeah, that sounds like a good plan. You know, my wife is telling me that I should have a kid with this other. Yeah, that sounds, I don't know what's happening there. But anyways, it happened. And so she had a boy and they're like, okay, God, we saved you. You had this plan to make me into a great nation, but you didn't give us any kids through Sarah. So we came up with our own plan and we saved your butt, God. You're welcome. You are so welcome. And now I have a son who I can pass all my stuff on to, and that blessing I can pass on to. But check this out. That wasn't God's plan. It wasn't God's plan from the get-go, and God let him know so. But check out, this is what happened. Wait for it. So this is in Genesis 20. Abraham moved on from there into a region of Negev. For a while he stayed in Gerar, and there Abraham said to his wife, She is my sister. Then Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent for Sarah and took her. But God came to Abimelech in a dream one night and said to him, "You are as good as dead because of the woman you have taken. She is married." But Abimelech had not gone near her. So he said to the Lord, "Lord, will you destroy an innocent nation?" Did he not say to me, she is my sister? And didn't she also say, "He is my brother"? I have done this with a clear conscience and clean hands. And God said to him in a dream, "Yes, I know you did this with a clear conscience, and so I've kept you from sinning against me. That's why I didn't let you touch her. Now return the man's wife, for he is a prophet, and he will pray for you, and you will live. But if you do not return her, you may be sure that you and all yours will die." Now check this out. So he's going into this foreign land, and because he has a super hot wife, this is how I know for a fact she's super hot, but still old. Because he has a super hot wife, he turns to her and he says, "You know what? We don't really have super clear mirrors yet, but you are super hot. And I am really worried that if we go to this land, people are going to be like, 'Dang, she's fine.' And they're going to want to kill me so that they can have you for themselves. So why don't we do this? Why don't we just say, 'You're my sister and I'm your brother.' That way they don't kill me." And she's like, "Okay, I guess." I'd love to see what happened there too. But she's like, "Okay, I guess." And so that happens, and somebody's like, "Oh, this is your sister. She's good looking, right?" And the reason I know that she's super hot is because this is not the first time that this has happened to these two people. When they were in Egypt way back in the day, the same exact thing happened. He came into Egypt. He's like, "You're my sister. I'm your brother." I'm like, "All right." And the Pharaoh like married her. And then it got all awkward because she was already married. And this happened twice. Now, be honest with you. Has anybody ever heard a story where somebody was so good looking that their husband or wife was like, "You know what? I'm scared to be with you. It's like dangerous to be married to you because you're so good looking." Has that ever happened to anybody you know? Besides my wife? Yeah. Thank you. But don't embarrass me. It's like never happened. But she's so good looking that this happened to her not once, but twice. And so, but this is again Abraham's plan, because God had promised Abraham that through Sarah, that he was going to be a great nation, that he would have an heir, and that he would pass on this blessing, and that this nation would bless the entire world. And he didn't believe God. And he said, "You know what? Once again, I'm going to save your butt, God." And it turns out that this almost foiled God's plan once again. So this story goes on. Shut it. The story goes on. And time after time after time, it looks like Abraham is going to foil God's plan. Until one day, Abraham wakes up. And this happened. Sometime later, God tested Abraham. You probably heard this story. He said to him, "Abraham, here I am," he replied. Then God said, "Take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love." Oh, I forgot to mention, they ended up having a kid. That's kind of an important part of the story. I don't know where that happened. All right, but they had a kid. She was like 90 years old, and he was like over 100, and that's a little weird in and of itself. There's a lot of weird things in the story. But this 90-year-old hot woman had a baby, and they named him Isaac, and God was like, "I waited this long so that everyone would know that this is from me. This is not something that you guys came up with your servant. This is not something that could have happened by accident, because let's face it, she's 90, and I get that it was weird, but I had to do it this way." And they had this kid when they were super duper old, and they named him Isaac. So then God said, "Take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, to go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains I will tell you about." Now check it out. God has this plan to redeem people. God has this plan to make things right again. And time after time after time, right when God is initiating this plan, Abraham almost messes it up. But now things are a little different. Because God had promised Isaac, but now, it seems like it's God who's messing it up. Because if Isaac dies, how is God going to keep his promise? So Abraham was like, you want me to what? Sacrifice my kid? No way. That's not happening. Actually, he didn't even do that. This is literally what the Bible says. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains I will tell you about. Early the next morning, Abraham got up and saddled his donkey. He took with him two servants and his son Isaac. The very next morning, they got up early and they packed everything up. And they chopped some wood, and they loaded up the donkeys, and they headed out to the mountains so that Abraham could kill his son Isaac. And you might have heard the story before, but they go up, and then off in the distance, Abraham sees the spot where it needs to happen. And so he leaves his servants, and he leaves his donkey, and he takes all the wood, and he piles it on top of Isaac, and he says, carry the stove over here. And Abraham, being the stud of a dad he is, while his son is carrying the huge thing of wood, he carries a knife and a torch. That was pretty cool. And so Isaac is struggling up the mountain to take it, and he starts to look around. He's like, wait a second. Aren't we going to make a sacrifice? We don't even have like an animal. Like there's no goat or anything. And can you imagine the feeling that Abraham felt when his son said that? You imagine the feeling, knowing in his head, knowing in his heart, that God has asked him to sacrifice him. And now he's making him carry the wood that he's going to burn his body with up the mountain to where he's going to be sacrificed with the knife in his hand. You see, it seems like nothing ever goes right. God has this great plan. And we mess it up by eating the apple. God has this great plan, but then Cain kills Abel. God has this great plan, but we go so awry that God is sad that he made us. And so he wipes almost everybody out. And God had this great plan and he tried to start over. But when he started over, people just started to look, man, I'm so great. And they forgot about God and they built a tower up to the heavens to show how great they become. And God had this great plan. Okay, that didn't work, so I'm going to make things right a different way. And so I'm going to bless this guy, and he's going to bless everyone else through his offspring. And time after time after time, Abraham almost blows that plan of God, and God has to intervene and step in multiple times and be like, no, this is not the way it has to happen. It has to happen this way. And literally guide Abraham as he's trying to wander. And it seems like nothing goes right because even when God finally gives Abraham a son, God says, you know what? I want you to sacrifice him. I want you to show me how important I am to you. I want you to show me how much you trust me. Has God ever asked you to do something like that? I feel like a lot of times in our lives, or at least in my life, we can go through life saying, yeah, I trust in God. Yeah, I come to church. Yeah, I go to small groups. Yeah, sometimes I read my Bible. I pray before my meals. Yeah, God's important to me. And yet when God asks us to take the things that are important to us and give them to Him, we hesitate. We hesitate. Have you been there? Maybe you see somebody new or somebody who's constantly made fun of or is an outcast at your school, and you know that you should go and sacrifice your pride or sacrifice your time with your friends and go reach out to that person, but it's just too hard. What are people going to say about you? I only have so much time to spend with my friends. Maybe you've seen somebody who has a real need. Maybe it's just somebody homeless and you have some extra stuff or you have some extra money, but you're saving up for something cool, an iPod or something. I think God asked Abraham to sacrifice his son because he wanted not only to know that Abraham trusts him and thinks he's important, but I think he wanted Abraham to know that Abraham trusts God. You see, how can you trust God if you're not willing to give him the things that he asks? And so Abraham does. And the movie in my head, the way that the story goes, is they go up to the top of the mountain and they gather together some rocks and they build an altar and they take all the wood and they lay it on the altar. And then when Isaac's looking around for the sacrifice, Abraham says, look, we need to talk. Why don't you sit down right here? When Isaac sits on a rock, Abraham pulls out a cord. He says, look, as he's tying his feet together, God talked to me yesterday. He said, I have to sacrifice you. And in the movie in my head, it gets zoomed in real slow, like, you know, dramatics, stringed instruments playing in the background, and tears start streaming down Isaac's face. But why? Why would you do that? Why would God ask you to do that? And I don't know if Abraham had any answers for him, but I know tears are streaming down his face as he's tying his hands together. And they're both crying as Abraham scoops him up and walks him over to the altar and lays him down there. And with the torch set up over here where he's going to burn him after he kills him, he pulls out his knife and he looks at it and his hand's probably trembling. And tears are streaming down his face and tears are streaming down Isaac's face. And he trusts God and he knows that God's going to provide a sacrifice, but it's not here yet. And his son is laying on the altar and he's tied down. And he's crying, and he takes a knife, and he raises it to kill him, and just then, like in any good movie, God rolls in and says, hold up a second. But Abraham doesn't hear him, and so he starts to come down like this, and God reaches out and grabs his hand, just as the knife is right above his eye. And then you get like a zoomed in real close up here, and then Isaac blinks twice. And there's like slow motion camera that goes like all the way around, you know? That's the movie in my head. But it's basically similar like that. All right. And then and God says, hold on a second. Now I know. And now I hope that you know that you can give the most important thing in the world to you. Now you know that you trust me more than anything else. So now the rest of your life follow after me because I want you and your heirs to be a blessing to everybody else for the rest of time. And caught in the bushes right over here. I don't know why they didn't see it earlier, but it was there the whole time. Caught in the bushes right over here is a sheep and its horns is a ram actually. And his horns were stuck. And now, I don't know how you get over those daddy issues when your dad tries to kill you on top of a mountain. But, I mean, some of us have some daddy issues, but that's a pretty bad one. I don't know. He needs some therapy or something. So, anyways, they sacrifice the ram and they both head home together and mom never knew anything about it. He said, you know what, let's just keep this between us because, you know, yeah, it's father-son bonding. That was a cool game that we played. Let's not tell mom about that. And they go home together and Isaac grows up and Abraham and Sarah get even older and Sarah probably even gets hotter. I don't know. You don't really know, but they're definitely older, right? And they end up dying and Abraham leaves everything that he has to Isaac and all the blessing that God put on Abraham, he passed on to Isaac. He says, I'm going to make you a great nation and everybody's going to be blessed through you. And then Isaac has twin boys. And actually, one of them, Esau is born first. He's the oldest. Jacob is born, and it says that when he was born, he was actually born holding on to his brother's heel. Like, oh my gosh, you're going to be the first one. I want to be the first. And he's trying to pull them back in, you know, so he can, like, scoot by in the birth canal. It doesn't really work like that. It'd be really painful. But that's what he was going for. Sorry. Let's just take a minute and think about how painful that would be. Ladies, I don't know. Because one is really painful, I hear. But two, like trying to pass each other? Oh, man. That'd be awful. Picture it? Yeah, bad. All right. So anyways, so he's literally grabbing onto his heel when he's born. And he's almost like, I want to be the first one. I want to be the one with the blessing that's going to get passed on. So he has these twins, right? And they, and Esau, the one that's born first, he's a hunter. And he says he's super duper hairy, which is also really hot, I hear. I don't know. Ladies dig those super duper hairy guys. So, all right. And then there's Jacob, and he is smooth skinned. He's like straight out of like Twilight or something. I don't know. But he's like so smooth, right? And he's this deceiver, and he keeps deceiving his brother, and he steals his birthright, and he trades it for a bowl of soup because Esau's so hungry after hunting one day. And over and over and over, he's just deceiving people. And then one day, his mom, he was his mom's favorite, and his mom says, you know what? I want you to have all the blessing. And so what they do, this is so awesome. This is one of the greatest stories ever. So what they do is they go out and they kill one of the goats. Good plan so far. And they skin it. And what they do with the skin and the fur is that they put it on Jacob's arms and his back. And then their dad, Isaac, is super old and he's like basically blind now. And so he goes into his dad and he says, Dad, it's me, Esau. But really, it was Jacob with goat fur on his arms. Like Esau had to be so hairy. Have you seen a goat? Goats are so hairy, and then you put like goat fur on, like I'm pretty hairy, but like a goat, like that is awesome. Like, oh man. Like you could just shear him and then make like a blanket or like a coat. That'd be awesome. And then you grow it back and you just keep doing it. It'd be so sweet. All right. But I'm wearing like my Esau coat. No big deal. It's made from 100% Esau hair. That'd be so sweet. So anyways, they put goat skin on. He's like, it's me, Esau. I want my blessing now because you're getting old and you're blind. And you're going to die soon. And so Isaac said, yeah, well, it kind of sounds like Jacob. Come over here and let me just feel you. And he's like, okay. And he's probably pretty nervous because he's like, I'm wearing goat fur. This is ridiculous. And he puts his arm out and he's probably like wincing. Like, what's he going to do? And Isaac feels him and he's like, oh, it's totally Esau. I'm convinced. I'm convinced. And that's how you know he was so super hairy. And so he's like totally convinced. And he's like, okay. And I bless you. And you're going to be a father of many nations, and you're going to be a blessing to everyone else. And so the blessing that Abraham got, he passed on to Isaac, and Isaac passed it on to not Esau, who was the firstborn, but it was Jacob, who was grabbing onto Esau, wanting to be the firstborn so bad, even from birth. And he passes it on to him. Esau comes home. He's like, what just happened? I was getting food for the family, and now all my blessing is gone. And so just like me when I was a kid, with this grand plan of building this underground den that was going to be awesome, that still someday I'm going to do, probably with Noah. It's going to be awesome. You guys should come hang out in it. I'm serious. You're invited. Just like I had that plan that never came to fruition. It just never, things just kind of kept coming up that were like, oh yeah, I don't know if the roof collapses. Yeah, I don't know if I can dig that far down. Yeah, I didn't really tell my mom exactly about it. Things kept coming up that foiled my plan for a time until I do it. It might be awesome. In the same way, it seems like God had this plan to create something perfect, something awesome, and we just foiled it. But then God was like, okay, I'm going to start over. And he wipes out the earth with a flood, and he said, okay, I'm starting over with this guy that's already looking towards me. And yet it seems to be foiled over and over by Abraham. And then it seems to be nearly foiled by God. And then it seems to be nearly foiled by Jacob, who is this deceiver. And this plan that God had to redeem people to himself, to make all things better, to make all things right, doesn't seem to be going according to plan. When Jacob grows up, he ends up having 12 sons. And next week we're going to talk about one of those sons and what happens with him and how he fits into this plan. Because from here on out, we're going to be talking about this plan that God has to redeem people back to himself. And I'm really excited about it. I'm really excited about doing this all school year long. so that we can kind of get a big picture of what in the world is this Bible about, because there's all these weird stories. But I think once we have this big picture of what is this Bible about, a lot of those weird stories are going to start to make sense. Maybe not all of them, but a lot of them. So I'm going to close this in prayer. And we have a few announcements, and you guys can hang out. Let me close this. God, I want to thank you for this morning. Thanks for a chance to come together to worship you through music. Thanks for providing us with just an awesome band and this sweet setup in this room that we can worship you in. And God, I pray that we would just continue to come here and take advantage of that time, just to worship you, to show you how great that you are, to show you how thankful we are that you are in our lives, that you are involved in our lives, that you are looking after us. God, I pray that this morning, as we took a look at your word and we saw this story about your plan starting to unfold and the twists and turns that it's taken already in day one of phase two, God, I just I pray that you would continue to show us this big picture story of what you're trying to tell us in the Bible. And God, I pray that as we looked at this story and we looked at the story of Abraham and how you asked him to give back to you the thing that was most important, the thing that he loved so much, the thing that you promised to give him, you asked him to give it back to you. God, I pray that we would take a look at our own lives and the things that are really important to us, and that we would ask the question, are we willing to give that to God if he asked for it? And God, I pray that you would work in our hearts to get us to that point where we could say, you know what? Anything you want, it's yours because I want you. I love you. I trust you. God, take my iPod. God, take my Xbox. God, take my friends from me. God, take my family. God, take my car. God, take all my fashionable clothes. Whatever you want, take it. God, work in our hearts and get us to a place where you're so big and you're so important to us that we're willing to give anything. Thank you for working through Abraham to get him to the point where he didn't trust you to the extent that he had to lie about who his wife was. Thank you for taking Abraham from the extent to where he would just not trust you and he slept with someone else to try to cover your tracks, and all the way so that he didn't trust you. Thank you for taking him through those things and getting him to a point where he's willing to say, you know what, it's my son, but I'm willing to give them to you. God, I pray that you do the same thing in all of us. That we would come here Sunday mornings and continue to just grow and trust you and understand how much, how high, how deep, how wide, how long your love for us is. And that love that you have for us would transform us, and that we would want to be a blessing to the world like you promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that they would be. God, we love you, and we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.